Welcome today to our interview series with Outstanding Professionals. I'm Stephen Ibracki, and I'm conducting an exclusive interview with Matt Valentine, industry-leading technology solutions architect, Microsoft Redmond. Matt, you have a diverse background leading major international projects. Thank you for sharing your deep experiences and insights with our audience.
Thanks, Stephen. I'm very honored to have the opportunity to speak with you today.
Matt, can you start off by telling us a little bit about yourself and your role at Microsoft?
Sure. I'd be happy to. Currently, I work on Microsoft's Application Platform Marketing team, where our mission is to help organizations innovate and grow with secure, scalable, reliable, manageable, and cost-effective software. Specifically, my role, I work with customers, partners, and technical communities to improve Microsoft's understanding of their business and IT challenges so that we, as a product marketing organization, can ensure we're delivering customers with the best tools, frameworks, and products that they need to grow, compete, and be successful. It's really a great role for me. I've always had a passion for applying technology to help people create solutions that positively impact their businesses and their lives.
You know, Matt, I was looking at your profile, and you have an amazing background and obviously international experience. You've developed major applications and so on. So what triggered your initial interest in technology?
Let's see. For me, I guess it all started with Lego blocks, those little blocks that you can buy at the toy store. They really allowed me to learn the basics of engineering, you know, levers, pulleys, gears, motors. And they really unlocked my imagination so that when I got my first Apple IIe computer in 1984, the lessons that I learned from Legos about modular design and arranging and connecting components logically for me translated directly to the basics of software development. As a result, I've been working with software ever since. I studied computer science in school and have been working with customers to build and develop software to drive innovation and business advantage. So more recently in Microsoft, I've been working with customers and communities to create a feedback loop to help Microsoft improve our understanding of what's happening out there in the real world with IT and continue to be a leader in innovation.
What lessons can you share from your prior roles?
Oh, wow, let's see. I've worked in several capacities as a software professional, and I guess the biggest lesson that I would share is don't lose the source code. I had a financial services customer early in my career asked me to modify a custom application that they had paid an independent software contractor to develop. However, it was 5 years later, and the contractor and the source code were long gone. And the customer, not knowing the intricacies of software development, not knowing that you write the code, you compile it into object code, then link it into an executable, just didn't understand that I couldn't open the .exe file and make the changes that they were requesting. The only viable option was a full rewrite, which they couldn't afford or have the appetite for. So in the end, the project was scrapped, and really they were in quite a bind. But seriously, some of the major lessons that I would share with up-and-coming IT professionals, you know, as you know, there are three interdependent variables in project management: time, money, and quality. But really, time is the most important variable and trumps the others, especially in the current economic environment. So as a result, no one but you really cares about how elegant your design and how elegant your architecture is. The business really needs results now. And this is where proven, stable, supported application development tools and frameworks can increase the quality of your software and also decrease the time to market. The second point is software is still a mystery to many. When you spend all of your time heads down in technology, like many of us do, it's easy to forget that many people aren't as familiar with the tools and technologies as we are. So more recently in my career, I've been working with more business and marketing types, and while this should come as no surprise, they're really cut from a different cloth than the engineers. And really, the unfortunate reality is very few of them really understand the value that IT delivers. So individuals who can bridge both of these worlds, understanding the business strategy, whether it be releasing a new product or entering a new market like China or Europe, or streamlining operations to achieve operational efficiency, bridging those with effective software solutions, people who can do that are a rare breed and well-positioned for success. And this is really a skill worth growing and cultivating. It's a good idea to keep in mind the words of Dale Carnegie. When dealing with people, remember that you are not dealing with creatures of logic, but of emotion. Then finally, as I've progressed through my career, I've come to the conclusion that IT is a science and an art. It's not just possible to focus on one just subject area or one specific technology. You have to focus on driving a balance between sometimes seemingly opposing forces. This is what makes it an art and a science. You have to invest in innovation while driving down costs. So this cognitive dissonance can be tough, especially for engineers who are looking for a single unifying model to serve as one logical path.
Well, those are great lessons and so forth from your background. So now, in your role, you work closely with customers and communities. What do you hear as the biggest obstacles IT organizations are challenged with?
In some ways, it's the same as it's ever been. What I hear from customers and communities is the biggest challenge continues to be how to effectively drive alignment between the business and business objectives and business goals and what IT can deliver. As engineers and technical specialists, there's the tendency, or perhaps the natural trait, to try to analyze and balance every conceivable permutation and outcome when constructing a solution. You know, very similar to the waterfall method of software development, where you try to capture all of the requirements, then you write the software, release it, then there's a big paradigm shift to match the new software, and then another long period of analysis before starting the cycle all over again. Today, in today's world, the world of business is moving just too quickly. People need results faster than ever. Therefore, it's necessary to constantly push yourself to take action with less and less information and with higher degrees of uncertainty, more akin to the agile development methodologies where you focus on delivering value as fast as possible and then iterating quickly to continually refactor and refine the code. So I found that this thinking can really apply to IT in the large, where you focus on delivering projects that increase flow, and by flow I mean value for the customer, then simplifying and reducing waste through consolidation. This agile mindset has helped me manage change, make decisions, and take action more quickly in order to meet the needs of the business.
Again, Matt, you have this tremendous background and such a long history of many successes. And as a result, how would you then describe your top innovative achievements in terms of the problems you're trying to solve, your solutions, and the impact it has today and even into the future?
Oh, good question. Let's see. The word achievement implies completion, and I think we've made a lot of progress personally, professionally, in the industry and at Microsoft, but I feel that we're far from done. For product development, there's the old adage, do one thing and do it well. But this is sometimes orthogonal to the customer experience. Think about shaving, for example. You can have the best razor, the one with 10 blades, but you also need shaving cream, a razor, perhaps a towel, a sink, and perhaps some aftershave lotion. Today you buy each of those things separately, probably from different vendors and suppliers, just so you can shave in the morning. This is really not an ideal customer experience. So a technology analog is perhaps when building a website. You need hardware, software, a web server, a database, some application development tools, perhaps a hosting environment, again, all from different vendors and suppliers. And it's this complexity that introduces friction and cost into the system. So what we've been doing at Microsoft is trying to find these high-value technology scenarios and simplify them and make them easy for customers to consume and create value for them and their businesses. So let me give you some examples. First of all, we recently released the Web Platform Installer. This newly launched beta alleviates the need for developers to go to a bunch of different websites to download a bunch of different tools and install them. This version includes PHP, IIS, SQL Server, .NET, Visual Web Developer, ASP.NET, Silverlight, all with one download. Another example would be business intelligence. Information is at the core of a business's ability to drive and make effective decisions. But today, data resides among many different repositories across the organization. We're focusing on trying to bring that data together and making that information available with powerful and familiar tools like Windows, Excel, SharePoint, and SQL Server, again, trying to reduce the friction. And finally, a third example, in today's interconnected world, it's not uncommon for people and teams across separate organizations, companies, and even countries to come together to deliver business applications. Generally, these people are using different tools, and this increases the friction between the different development roles. By using an integrated development system, you can reduce this friction and increase productivity as well as deliver more stable, secure, and manageable business applications. So going forward, we're going to continue to see this consolidation of capabilities and features. It's the natural order of technology to consolidate, and I feel that Microsoft is clearly an innovator here.
So can you now describe your current work and what you hope to achieve?
Sure. What I'm working on now is a bit of a departure from the pure technology roles that I've had. In my current role, I'm focusing on creating a bridge between Microsoft and our customers and partners through effective community engagement. Clearly, for Microsoft or any customer-focused organization, it's absolutely critical to stay plugged into the IT community. User groups, professional associations, blogs, social media. Really, you know, social media is very exciting. It's really emerging as a very interesting way to stay connected with your customers. The goal here is to keep our finger on the pulse of the industry and ensure that we're investing and innovating in the right areas. This way, we can be sure that we're focusing on the issues that are top of mind for IT professionals and that we're providing customers with the products, frameworks, tools, and platforms that they need to grow, compete, and be successful.
So I guess part of your strategy is really this interview because it's going out to a number of user groups worldwide in over 100 countries, and that's a great way to connect.
Indeed. Just go ahead and put this out there. Matt Valentine at Microsoft, M-A-T-T-V-A at Microsoft. I'm thinking about our community and community strategy. If you have thoughts and feelings, please let me know.
You know, you talked about your really a bridge between Microsoft and your customers and partners and effective community engagement and so on. But you also have this sort of business element as well. So what is driving alignment between business and IT? And why is it more important than ever?
This is always one of the big challenges in the industrial age or in the information age, aligning these engineering investments with the needs of the business. In the current economic environment, which is a tough one for sure, there's still increased expectations of IT, where people want more capabilities and features and functions, but there's fewer resources. So the ability to drive alignment between business and IT has never been more critical than it is right now.
So, you know, we're in the middle of an economic challenge, and this has been the case for quite some time now. So how does the recession then deliver unparalleled opportunities for innovation?
Yeah, well, one of my favorite expressions is necessity is the mother of invention. You know, as I was saying, you or your organization, your customers or partners or suppliers or employees are going to continue to demand new capabilities, whether it's something cool they saw from a vendor or something that they saw in an advertisement or something they dreamed up themselves. They're going to want more and more capabilities from IT, but unfortunately with likely far fewer resources. So it's exactly these constraints that offer IT an unparalleled opportunity for innovation, doing more for less. The fact is, that in any economy, innovation is the foundation for success. You can't save your way to success. So while there's an overall slowdown in spending, organizations still need to make smart investments in innovation to help them grow. Let me give you an example. During the Great Depression, RCA, which was investing in television technology, continued to invest and managed to emerge stronger and establish themselves as the leader in television technology for the next 25 years.
I guess there's other examples. I think in a prior conversation you talked about Sears.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Sears is also a great example. They continue to invest in opening new stores around the country, new retail stores during the Great Depression. And this was defied conventional wisdom, but it set them up to be one of the big box retailers for the next 50 years.
So why does a practical approach to IT focus on balancing business, technology, and user goals with the objective of delivering new near-term revenue and efficiency gains?
What I call a practical approach to IT, it's about really doing things with a near-term focus. Really, a practical approach to IT and architecture seeks to balance business goals like increasing share or increasing customer satisfaction, technology goals like increasing reliability and scalability, and user goals like increasing productivity and ease of use. Balancing those, coupled with the fact that in today's economic climate, now is not the time to embark on lengthy and expensive business reengineering efforts. In fact, according to Gartner, most organizations are reducing their focus on longer-term issues. Probably no surprise there. So as a result, the key to surviving and emerging stronger from the economic downturn is really to use practical approaches to IT to intensify opportunities to produce near-term revenue and efficiency gains.
So some of this is summarized in a beautiful article that you wrote, and I'd like to sort of focus on that now. Can you summarize the key points in your article, Practical Architecture, or Architecture, I should say, in Impractical Times?
Sure. Earlier in our conversation, we spoke about driving a balance about seemingly opposing forces. With my engineering mind, I like to have models for most things that I work with, and I've created a model for practical architecture. It really focuses on balancing IT strategy across four areas. The first area, driving efficiency through effective IT practices. This is essentially doing the right things and doing things right. The second area is finding new opportunities to grow the business, identifying high-value customers, both internal and external, and making sure that they are satisfied with the value and service they get. The third, creating new efficiencies to reduce costs, you know, doing more with less. And finally, helping all users increase productivity, devs, admins, analysts, administrators, and compressing the time it takes them to do their jobs and deliver value to this organization. Clearly, there's no one single path, but trying to find a balance through these four forces with these four forces as an effective way to maintain practical architecture.
You know, when this interview comes out, what we can do is put a link to the article, and also the listeners can do a search under Bing, for example, of Practical Architecture in Impractical Times, and they'll find the link to your article.
Yeah, that'd be great. There's a lot of customer evidence and case studies, as well as links to further resources.
I was just looking at the article again, and you have so many quotes and interesting kind of ideas in there. So it must have taken you some time to write it.
Yeah, it was fun. It was interesting because in my current role, I don't get out in front of customers as much as I usually do. So I took it as an opportunity to really connect and understand what issues and challenges were top of mind for a lot of different people. It was really a great opportunity to connect with a lot of smart people.
But it also shows your part philosopher as well.
Yeah, I get that sometimes.
And you've been doing presentations on this area, right?
I have. I've been delivering this at the Microsoft internal training events, as well as at the Microsoft Executive Briefing Center.
Well, that's excellent. Now, what action should be taken by those responsible for creating efficiencies to reduce costs?
So in my model, I really think of it as two areas. First of all, driving down the cost of IT, using things such as server virtualization and database consolidation to reduce the cost of running those server workloads. How do we take advantage of these new technologies to reduce labor costs, reduce licensing costs, reduce server costs, and in some cases we've seen up to 63% lower management costs by using this approach. More information is available in the paper. The second is using a service-oriented approach to try to improve business process flow, automate business processes, improve management, and optimize. So through a service-oriented approach, we've seen some cases where Microsoft has been able to reduce costs of their supply chain by $3 million a month in their entertainment and devices division. Another example is EDS, an HP company, began a project to help airlines extend the life and value of existing IT systems. So by using a service-oriented approach, they can decouple these processes from mainframes and move them to more cost-effective systems and see a improvement in total cost of ownership by 30%.
So what can be done to find new opportunities to grow business?
The key part of that question is really the finding opportunities. Information is at the core of businesses' ability to make effective decisions. So any initiatives that increase the quality, timeliness, usefulness, and flow of information have a direct correlation to finding those opportunities and increasing revenue. A practical approach is to focus on anticipating the needs of your customers, both internal and external, because really they are the key to your success and your growth.
What are the best ways then to help all users, developers, administrators, and analysts increase productivity?
Today, given the ubiquity of networking, it's not uncommon for people and teams across separate organizations, companies, and even countries to come together to deliver business results. So for IT professionals, this means new models for information sharing and collaboration that transcend traditional security perimeters and traditional security domains. So how do we create a mix of on-premises and off-premises software that allows these different groups to work together to deliver value and increase productivity?
You know, we sort of touched on this before. There's a tremendous amount of churn in the marketplace, a tremendous amount of complexity. Technology is really everywhere, and this requires, everybody being particularly agile, and you even talked about that, and being alert to what's happening in the context of their environment. So how would you manage change?
Yeah, I'll admit that being a engineer and an analyst, I'm always looking for more data to help inform my decisions. But in recent years, working closer to the business, I realized that it takes too long or the information is simply not available. And by applying what I learned around agile development methodologies to my overall personal strategy, where work is performed in small, rapid increments with minimal planning, and it's very closely aligned with customer needs, the productivity tools we have can help us iterate very, very quickly, and change can be managed more easily. Sure, there are still big projects where you need to think them out from soup to nuts, but a lot of what we do in our daily operations, if we can just do it quickly and iterate, it's a good way to guarantee a close connection to the business.
You know, I'm sort of now thinking of change from outside of the work environment in terms of balance in your life. So how do you manage change and work-life balance?
Good question. I have two small children, a 3-year-old and a 18-month-old, and talk about change. Every day is a different change, a different experience. So, it's thinking on your feet and being agile. That's I would use the same model there.
What do you do for relaxation?
Oh, we're going camping this weekend. We like to get out, do some hiking, get out and enjoy the great outdoors. One of the great things about living in Washington is the beautiful environments and the great park system. There's just so much to see and do here. We enjoy going over to the Olympic Peninsula and exploring over there. It's very rustic, and it's the way it was 200 years ago. It's a lot of fun.
Okay, so that's a great way, right, of managing change.
Now, one of the best ways is just to get away from it.
You know, Matt, you're very eclectic and you're very knowledgeable, and you have this great work background as well. And I said you're part philosopher when people read your paper. So coming from all of these different perspectives, can you make your predictions for the future, their implications, and how business executives and IT professionals can best prepare?
Sure, I can take a shot at it. One of the things that I see that is most exciting is really around this concept of cloud computing, this idea where third parties will host the applications that you write in their data centers, and that these applications will automatically scale to meet your requirements. What this does is this reduces the need for capital expenditures for IT, where you will instead just pay by the drink or pay by the transaction for computing services. So, in addition to this big computing paradigm shift, I anticipate three other areas where this will impact. First of all, we'll start to see an emergence of new and exciting hybrid models that take advantage of the benefits of both traditional on-premises and these new off-premises computing models. And we'll have to find new architectures and ways to balance and mitigate the benefits of each. Another one is IT organizations that take advantage of cloud computing resources since a lot of that planning around buying hardware, waiting for it to be delivered, setting it up, testing it, setting up the software, staging it, you know, a lot of that lead time, which could be on the order of months or perhaps years, just goes away because you can write this app, put it up in the cloud, and it can scale to internet scale in a matter of days. So this is a good thing for IT departments because we'll be able to reduce the backlog of requests that we will receive. And then cloud computing will also provide access to cheap and easy scalable IT services to many small organizations. I mean, they won't have to make the investments that they have to have today. So as a result, you'll see smaller organizations that are more nimble be able to compete against larger organizations. So you might have somebody with two guys and an idea who write an app can take advantage of the economies of scale of the cloud, compete against some of the world's largest data centers. So from a IT professional perspective, this reality is quickly creeping up on us, and we need to be aware of how we can also take advantage of the cloud so that we're not quickly overshadowed by these small upstarts.
Well, it sounds like
go ahead.
You're talking about a combination of things like what, Windows Live, Azure, Windows Business Productivity, online suites, and so on.
Yep, absolutely. So this is the realm of cloud computing is loosely defined at best, but the technologies that you mentioned are definitely included. There are things where you will get your email from the cloud. How much sense does it make to run that on-premises? And that needs to be evaluated. Being able to run business applications or have platform as a service where you can have your applications hosted by another vendor. Being able to take advantage of intermediary services that provide security and identity and collaboration services. A lot of the stuff that we've had to build for ourselves internally, unless it provides us competitive and strategic advantage, it might make sense to farm those out to the economics of the cloud.
So this model is what, software plus services?
Exactly.
You know, there's a lot of challenges out there, and again, you're very well positioned for this because of your expertise. So what do you see as the three top challenges facing us today, and how do you propose they be solved?
Wow, that's a big question. I think the three top challenges, really the first one is surviving in the current economic environment. We need to sort of make it over this hurdle and all emerge stronger so that we can continue to do the things that I think as technology professionals that we know and love. Another one of my favorite expressions is, smooth seas don't make good sailors. So think of this as a time to really learn how to weather the storm and emerge from the other side stronger and better equipped and with better experience. The second area I really think has to do around the complexity of IT. We've seen, I think, maybe five or six different generations of computing, starting with mainframes, then going through the PC era, then client-server, then internet, and services, and cloud. The thing is, the previous generation doesn't really go away. So for people entering the market now, they may be super familiar or want to work in environments that have Facebook-type apps or Twitter-like functionality. But the reality is the IT centers really have to maintain all of these different five models at the same time. So I think one of the key challenges is, you know, how do you manage all these different environments? And I think that one of the best ways is really to have a center of excellence around enterprise architecture, change management, and platform strategy. Otherwise, if you're constantly trying to meet the needs of the business in a whack-a-mole fashion, you're quickly going to find that it's untenable and unmanageable. And then finally, skills. You know, we've talked about this, and even in this current economic situation, hospitals, universities, IT, they're still having difficulty finding highly skilled quality labor to manage their IT systems and really create that bridge between the business and technology. So the solution, that's a tough one. More engineering, more science in schools. Globalization continues to be a short-term solution. But this is something that the shortage of skills that I think we all need to actively address for the industry.
You know, you get around, and you would no doubt have a list of resources that you find useful. So what would be your recommendations as the best job resources for IT professionals?
This probably comes as no surprise, but having a network of professional contacts is really, in my experience, the best ways to find new job opportunities. That's become somewhat easier with tools like LinkedIn and Facebook and search tools where you can find some of your old colleagues. Really maintaining those networks and making sure that you invest a certain amount of your time in participating in user groups, professional associations, skills transfer opportunities, and making sure that you're effectively building your brand across your organization and across the industry is really critical. And of course, there's all the, you know, the top job sites.
Well, let's do a little bit of an extension to this question then. Again, you are an outstanding professional, very successful. What are some key lessons that you learned that you want to pass on to enable the success of those in the audience?
For me, I found it very helpful to have a model that works in my head. So as we've talked about, being able to quickly identify patterns and create a model in my head that allows me to analyze and take action based off of what I'm seeing. A certain amount of that is experience, a certain amount of that is education, but being able to identify these patterns and take action. The second is we're in a very quick, fast-moving industry. It's important to dedicate a certain amount of time to staying on top of the current political, technical, and business issues. This is critical for the people who are trying to bridge the technology with the business. And then I would also never underestimate the importance of communication skills. Early in my career, I was locked in a server room for a few years, just cranking out code, and didn't have to talk to many people. It was fun from a technology perspective, but it really didn't have a lot of. It wasn't very rewarding in terms of working with people. So I would encourage people to work on their written and communication skills through things such as, you know, user groups and presentations and perhaps Toastmasters to you know, build that capacity.
Well, that's really interesting. So I'm just thinking of all the different things that we talked about during this interview today, and maybe I can summarize and see if you agree then. It sounds like you're talking about business skills and core industry knowledge. You're talking about a service-oriented attitude that is a focus on the customer and user experience. You're indicating that people should have deep interpersonal skills, communication skills, client relationship management, project management capability, and then all of this rounded off by technical skills and competencies.
Correct. Yes, that's a great summary.
You know, we're going to go into a slightly different topic area, and that is there's this organization called IFIP, the UN-founded International Federation for Information Processing, and they have this program called the International Professional Practice Partnership Program, which is a program for professionalizing the profession, and in fact, they launched an international certification program this year around the world. So do you have any comments on this?
Yeah, sure. The IT industry has been evolving very, very quickly, and as a result, there's a lot of disparity between skills and competencies around the world. So this is where as an engineer, I think you can appreciate a set of standards or a standard means of measurement and some capacity to have an independent assurance of skills and competencies is really critical. For the employer, this means improved risk management when resourcing projects. And for the practitioner, it means increased recognition and reward. So I think this is a very valuable effort, one that Microsoft believes in, and that's one that's very critical to the industry.
Well, you know, Matt, we're at the very end of our interview today. Do you have any closing comments?
I just want to, first of all, thank you for this opportunity to speak with you and share some of the things that we're doing at Microsoft and some of the experiences from my life and my career. We're very interested in hearing and learning about what the current challenges that IT professionals face, both in terms of managing their careers, in terms of meeting and delivering business solutions, and from the technical perspective as well. So if you have any thoughts and comments, please feel free to email me and let me know your thoughts, and we'll take that and use that to learn and grow and become a better organization for our customers and partners.
Well, Matt, with your demanding schedule, we are indeed fortunate to have you come in and do this interview with us. So thank you for sharing your substantial wisdom with our audience.
Well, thank you, Stephen. And again, I really appreciate the opportunity.
I'm Stephen Ibaraki, and this concludes our exclusive interview with the internationally renowned Matt Valentine, an industry-leading technology and solutions architect from Microsoft Redmond.